Welcome to Whiskey Cast, the Cask Strength podcast featuring news and interviews from the world of whiskey. I'm Mark Gillespie. This is episode number 77 for January 28th, 2007. Coming up in a few minutes.
We have a big red, bright maple leaf on the box and on the label, and it clearly says that it is Canadian.
That's Donnie Campbell of Glenora Distillers in Canada's Nova Scotia province. Glenora won a round this week in its fight to be able to produce Glenbretton Canadian single malt whiskey. More on that later, but first, let's look at the news. And starting off on a sad note, Glenrothes distillery manager John Sutherland passed away last weekend. He'd been hospitalized for several days before his death at home Saturday morning. Our condolences to John's family, along with his colleagues at the Glenrothes and Barry Brothers and Rudd. While the proposed United Spirits White and Mackay deal is still being hammered out, there appears to be some progress in the trade dispute between the European Union and India over that country's tariffs on imported whiskey. The Scotsman reports industry sources expect the Indian government to announce a cut in tariffs when it releases a new budget next month. Current regulations tack a tariff of between 25% and 550% on spirits imported into India, and the European Union has asked the World Trade Organization to intervene. The Scotsman report indicates that the U.S. and Australian governments have now weighed in on the side of the Europeans, presumably to get better access as well for American and Australian spirits. Turning to North America now, liquor sales in the U.S. rose more than 6% during 2006, according to the Distilled Spirits Council of the U.S. Whiskey sales gained 4.5% and accounted for $5 billion in sales. While bourbon, rye, and blended scotch all showed gains, the biggest increase came in Irish whiskey sales, which were up 29%. Single malt scotch sales rose 15%. Negotiators for Diageo and union workers at its Crown Royal distillery in Jimling, Manitoba, are hoping to avoid a strike this week. Members of the United Food and Commercial Workers Union have voted to go on strike Thursday if they don't get a new contract with a pay raise. The distillery produces about $500 million worth of Crown Royal annually, and Diageo officials say there's enough available in stock to meet current demand. Of course, since whiskey does need to be aged, a lengthy strike might create some supply issues several years down the road. If you're a Lafroy lover, as I am, and you plan to visit the distillery on Isla later this year, you'll find something new. Distillery manager John Campbell plans to have a new Friends of Lafroy room open in time for this year's Isla Festival of Music and Malt.
We want it ready kind of maybe about 3 to 4 weeks before that happens, just so as we're kind of ready. We've got all sorts of new things for people to do when they come to the site as well. We've got computers that link to the Lafroy website, so you can actually just make yourself a friend when you come to the distillery. So, and then print out your own certificates and stuff like that. So that should all be available to people when they come to the site now as well. So.
The festival is scheduled for the end of May, and there's a link to the Lafroy website at whiskeycast.com. The winter issue of Malt Advocate magazine is out now. Editor and publisher John Hansel gives us a preview.
This is our issue that has our annual awards program, which all the best from 2006, including I think is our best malt whiskey, the best American whiskey, the best blend, our favorite, our choice for distillery of the year and pioneer of the year. Lots of good things in there. We're very happy about some of the whiskeys that have come out over in the past year that's been really amazing. So we got that in there. The other thing we try to do is, I've been trying to do this past year with every issue is to expose what I think is either a misunderstood or an underappreciated whiskey category. If you read the last issue, we talked about, George Dickel, which was a Tennessee whiskey. And the issue before that, the cover story was, Suntory Yamazaki, Japanese whiskeys. And the current issue that just came out goes and discusses Canadian whiskeys, which I think are very much misunderstood. And we have some interesting things that we're reeling in there, including a couple of really cutting-edge people that are being very creative, the 40 Creek whiskeys at Kettling Ridge, for example.
John Hall won your Innovator of the Year award, right?
That's correct. I mean, the guy's doing something really amazing, and that I don't think anyone really understands or is aware of. He's actually making three different types of whiskeys. He's actually making a rye whiskey. He's making a corn whiskey, and he's making a malt whiskey. Individually, aging them individually, distilling them in pot stills and an old eau de vie still, actually, aging them individually, and then marrying them, blending them at the end after they've matured, and aging them in used sherry barrels before he bottles it. And it's pretty neat stuff. And he's an excellent winemaker. Actually, he's still making wine too, but he has a different approach to how he's making whiskey. It's a unique process that no one else is really doing it quite like him. And that's because he really doesn't pay much attention to what everyone else is doing. He told me he went and visited his first whiskey distillery last year. That was probably about 13 years after he's been making whiskey. He actually went to a distillery. So I thought that was pretty amazing. So that's in there. We're excited about that. The other thing that we have going on is I know a lot of people like to go visit distilleries. We have a story on actually distilleries that where you can stay at the distillery. They actually have accommodations where you can sleep over. So we're doing, most of those are on the islands and the coastal areas, but you can read up on that and maybe book a night at, you know, after you just tour a distillery, you can book a night at the distillery and stay over, which would be pretty cool, I think, too. Another thing we do is we take a look at how blended whiskey has changed over the past 50 or 100 years. Talk to a lot of master blenders who have done research and tasted some older blends, and just discuss how blended scotch have changed over the last several decades. So that's a good story too. It's a really interesting read.
By the way, John will host a special tasting of single malts at Monk's Cafe in Philadelphia February 20th with whiskeys from a number of silent and experimental stills. And tickets are on sale now for Malt Advocates Whiskey Fest in Chicago April 13th. Other events coming up in the next few weeks, the Linköpings Whiskey Expo will be held in Linköping, Sweden next weekend, followed by the International Malt Whiskey Festival in Ghent, Belgium on February 10th and 11th. Whiskey Live Tokyo is February 18th, and the following weekend is Dramfest 07 in Christchurch, New Zealand, and the Whiskey Festival North Netherlands in Groningen. Finally, the Brandy Library in New York City will hold a Spirit School Scotch Seminar on February 27th. You'll find a complete calendar of events at the WhiskeyCast website. The address is www.whiskeycast.com. Back in episode 72 last month, I reported on the legal battle between the Scotch Whiskey Association and Canada's Glenora Distillery. The Nova Scotia Distillery produces Glenbretton Rare Single Malt Whiskey and has been at odds with the SWA over that name for several years. The SWA opposes the use of the word Glen on any whiskey produced outside Scotland on the grounds that it could confuse consumers looking for Scotch whiskey. This past week, a Canadian trademarks board sided with Glenora and ruled that it can continue to use the Glenbretton brand name. The board found Canadian consumers are unlikely to confuse Glenbretton for a Scotch whiskey, especially since the label has a big red maple leaf on it. While the SWA does plan to appeal this week's ruling, let's find out more now about the whiskey inside the bottle. I talked with Glenora's Donnie Campbell at Whiskey Live Toronto last fall.
Well, Glenbretton is it's Canada's only single malt whiskey, and it's made in Cape Breton, Nova Scotia. The first distilling took place in 1990, and the first bottling was in 2000. Each year we've been bottling a 9-year-old. However, just that last year passed, we graduated to the 10-year mark, and each year it's developing quite nicely. The warehouses are set in an apple orchard. Along with the apples, there's also wild stands of maple trees, of cherry trees, and so the idea of aging whiskey is to pick up some of the environment as the whiskey breathes through the woods. So it's starting to pick up some of those apples and some of that maple and cherry, and it's quite evident actually when you walk into the warehouse. But it is starting to come out through the profile of the whiskey now too.
Now, is your whiskey exported?
There are a few pockets in the U.S. that we are located, but we are concentrating on the Canadian market, and even more so, we're concentrating on the Nova Scotia market. Now, we are up at the whiskey show here in Toronto, trying to create some awareness to the product as it is, because the LCBO is a big supporter of ours as well.
Tell me how does the whiskey taste?
Well, I think that the taste in the whiskey or profile is all up to the individual, and it's always quite suggestive too. But I find that it has picked up a lot of that. That there's some chocolate. There's definitely some hazelnut. Actually, it's quite strong in the hazelnut. There's a little bit of honey. There's a bit of maybe some ground ginger. A little bit of citrus. There's sometimes like the apple is more evident. Than other times. Sometimes I even find there might be even a hint of coconut in there. But we all sort of wonder, well, where do all some of these flavors come from? And some of them are obvious from the environment, but other flavors could be just combinations of flavors that we sort of group together and sort of assign a name to, and that being something like coconut or chocolate, because we don't have any chocolate trees.
Just to repeat, our interview was taped before the trademark ruling, and again, the SWA does plan to appeal that ruling in the Canadian courts. You'll find links to the websites for both sides at WhiskeyCast.com. That's all for this edition of WhiskeyCast. Of course, I'd love to hear your comments and suggestions for future episodes. My email address is comments@WhiskeyCast.com. WhiskeyCast is a production of MG Media, copyright 2007, and comes to you from the charming, yet regrettably dry town of Haddonfield, New Jersey. I'm Mark Gillespie, reminding you that when you drink, please drink responsibly. Thanks for listening.